Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to 2012. I want to wish you all a very happy and joyful new year, and also a very healthy and successful new year. And I think it's true to say that we all define success in our own way, and that's exactly what today's show is all about. Let me tell you about today's guests. My second guest is going to talk about making a living without a job. So whether you've recently lost your job, whether you want to just looking for extra ways to make some quick cash, or whether you're thinking about becoming self-employed, Barbara Winter has been, as she calls it, joyfully jobless for more than 20 years. And she's helped thousands of others find winning ways for creating work that they love. That's coming up around 12:30. First, we're going to find out what makes you tick. We're going to look at how successful people do it and what we can learn from their experiences. And there were some great stories to share here. I'm pleased to welcome Michael J. Berland of Penn, Schoen and Berland Associates. Michael Berland is an internationally recognized strategic advisor and communications consultant. He's an expert in how we think and behave as consumers, voters, and decision makers. And he's the author of the newly released book, What Makes You Tick, How Successful People Do It, and What You Can Learn From Them. Michael Berland, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I was telling you before we started, what a great group of stories you have in this book, and I definitely want to get into that. But before we get into the stories, the book is called What Makes You Tick, and I want to find out what makes you tick a little, Michael. I mentioned that you're an expert in how people think and behave as consumers. Tell us how this expertise, how this role evolved for you.
You know, from the time I was young, I was always fascinated how people think and how they behave. And I was very into politics growing up. And I decided that I didn't want to be the elected official, but that I wanted to sort of be the guy who whispers in their ear and sort of help them with strategy. And I turned that into a career over 20 years working with political figures as well as business leaders to understand how consumers, how voters make decisions.
And you co-wrote this book with Douglas Schoen. He's a partner of yours in your company. He's been a Democratic campaign consultant for more than 30 years, I read. He's advised 10 heads of state.
Sure.
What interested both of you in putting this together?
Well, after working for the heads of state and working with the business leaders, we felt that we wanted to share their stories. Like, we'd always helped them on projects, either get elected or sell more of their products or deal with public image. And it was their story that really fascinated us and inspired us. So we sort of turned it on its edge. And instead of studying the consumers or the voters, let's study the clients. Let's study those leaders who inspired and motivated us and share their stories with readers so that they could understand how successful people do it.
Yeah. And even writing this book was quite a journey itself, wasn't it? Because you began thinking of the book started germinating in 2006 when, you know, the Dow was at the high, jobs were plentiful. And I was reading an essay that you wrote, and you said you first conceived of this book, its focus was going to be winners versus losers, and you totally changed that around. Tell us a little bit about what makes this book different from other books out there.
Well, everybody was talking about winning. Do you remember Jack Welch?
Yeah.
It's still all about winning, and it's a win-win situation. And guys like Vince Lombardi said, winning's the only thing. And the truth of the matter is, we thought, well, let's explore that. Let's go explore winning. And is there a secret formula of winners? And as we got into it, the successful leaders and the elected officials told us, look, winning is just a way to keep score. It's just something that happens along the journey. And then Bob Woodward, the Washington Post writer, really helped cement it for us when he said, look, it's not about winning. It's about success. It's about an emotional, do you like what you're doing, and are you good at that? And that's what we all strive for. Winning is just something that happens along the journey.
Yeah. And so you say that you decided to ditch the blueprint for winning. And,
yes.
And but you said that what you discovered, you did 45 interviews for this book, and what you discovered was that you could quantify the successful personality.
And that's true. You absolutely, we could. And we started to see patterns emerging. And there were, well, we didn't go into the book looking for these patterns. As we started to talk about success and what motivated success and how did people see their life evolving, we found that there were four sort of archetypes. There were four broad groups of success that we saw. Natural-born leaders who were self-confident, highly competitive, organizationally oriented. We saw independent seekers who were restless, risk-takers, thriving on personal recognition. Visionaries who were relentless, focused, and very charismatic. And do-gooders who were serious, idealistic, and willing to make sacrifices. And so everybody had a different style of success, but these broad groups held true no matter who we are speaking to.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And I liked, I was telling you before the show, I liked that you didn't just include interviews with people in what we typically think of mainstream corporate business. I mean, you included supermodel Heidi Klum, race car driver Mario Andretti, Steve Forbes of Forbes magazine, Mark Burnett, the executive producer of Survivor. They had some fascinating stories to share, and you know, that overnight success thing certainly went to bed when you were reading these stories, because you realized a lot of these people had a lot of really incredible challenges to get where they are today.
Oh, that's so true. And you know, being the pollsters that we are, we were looking for a representative sample of success, and so we wanted to make sure that we crossed industries, that we crossed genders, that we looked at across different ethnicity to see, were these patterns of success common? And so you're exactly right. I remember when Heidi Klum decided to be in the book, and I thought, well, that's fascinating to have a supermodel who has broken the model. And mm-hmm. she was just starting at the time, you know, making the transition from Sports Illustrated to Project Runway, or a race car driver, or a restaurateur like Bobby Flay. These were all successful people, but not necessarily because they were the CEO of their company, although Richard Parsons, who's in the book, was a CEO.
Right.
So we wanted to look at all different types of success to see if we could see the patterns.
Now, I said that you'd included 45 interviews. How did you select the people that you did select?
There were all different ways. Some of them we had worked for and we knew personally. Others we admired. And some people came and actually volunteered to be in the book. So they came to us all different ways. Some people wanted to be a part of it. Some people we requested. What was fascinating about it is that we were able to get past the public relations bio. We were able to really get in. And our book actually inspired other books. We spoke to a CEO of Hearst Publications, Kathy Black, before she wrote her New York Times bestseller reflecting on her career. And actually, she asked for our transcript because we had sort of triggered a number of ideas for her.
Oh, I read her book. In I forget what it was called, Something Black.
Right.
Yeah. Black on Black or something like that. Yeah, Kathy Black.
But, yeah, a catchy name, but this was before she wrote it. And I got an inquiry about 6 weeks later saying, could you send me that transcript? There were so many good thoughts. And it's because we didn't ask her about her life once her career started. We said, how did you grow up? How did you see your life evolving? When did you start thinking about what you could do? And we started hearing stories about when she was 14 years old and riding horses in Chicago and going off to college. And that's, for many of the people in our book, there's an introspective period that starts early on in their life when they say, what am I good at? What do I find fulfilling? And they set their course and seek out opportunities that will fulfill that.
Yeah, it was quite fascinating. And we're going to go into some of the stories in just a moment. Of the 45 high achievers that you profiled, you found more than 50 unique descriptors of success and what that means. Since you're an expert in how we think, did you expect that response? Did it surprise you?
Everybody thinks about success differently. And what was most fascinating is that they knew what their definition of success. And it forced me to come up with my definition of success, which I had never even, you know, which I hadn't thought about it, yet I had been living it. And so I realized that my definition of success was having the ability to pursue my interests. And being a pollster, working on different campaigns, working for different corporations, I realized that is exactly how I pursued things. And so I knew I liked working on specific areas. I knew I could get very deep in projects, and then I wanted to work on something else. So whether I was working on Hillary's campaign last year, or working for Mike Bloomberg here in New York City, or working for British Petroleum overseas, or working for BlackBerry, I always loved working on a diverse group of projects. And my success was the ability to follow those interests no matter what I was doing.
So what archetype does that put you in, Mike?
Oh, I'm a complete independent seeker. Restless, risk-taking, thriving on personal recognition. Yeah, I wrote a book.
You know, I fell into that because I thought, when I was reading this, I thought, well, I think I fall a bit into each of them, which I'm sure many do. But then a couple of weeks ago on a show, I'd said my definition of success is living life on your own terms.
Yep.
And when I was looking at your descriptor of each archetype, that's how it began, living life on your own terms.
And that's so common for people. And you, as children growing up, we're always, you know, at least I felt conditioned to always go to the next level and try to be the boss. And if you're an independent seeker, you don't have to. It's all about doing what you want to do when you want to do it. And so sometimes you can work within a corporation. Sometimes you can work on your own. But you do what it is that fulfills you, and when you're done, you move on to something else. Have you done other? Is this your only career? Have you done other things?
Oh no, this is my third career.
Okay, what were the other two?
I grew up in the family business, which was a chain of hairdressing salons, and then I got into banking. I fell into banking because I went to a new town where my husband lived, then husband, but then I stuck in that for what, 10, 15 years. And I decided to quit the banking world and become a writer, and that led to being a producer, which led to be the radio show.
Exactly. And you might do this the rest of your life, and you might go do something else.
Right.
That's an independent seeker. And we go from opportunity to opportunity, always doing what we want to do, and typically we're very good at it. You know, like there's most of the things that we choose are right for us.
Yeah.
Because if they're not, we leave them fast.
That's true. That's true. I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to look at some of the stories, some of the actual people profiled in this fantastic book. It's called What Makes You Tick, How Successful People Do It, and What You Can Learn From Them. And my guest today is Michael Berland. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicky at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. 4772.
Is it a coincidence that obesity and depression have doubled in the last decade? Not at all, say the authors of a breakthrough book that's the first to clearly explain the link between how we eat and how we feel. Tune in next week to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for The Happiness Diet with clinical psychiatrist Dr. Drew Ramsey. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific and catch updates on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Happiness. Marley.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live. I'm Vicki St. Clair. My guest is Michael Berland. His new book, What Makes You Tick, How Successful People Do It, and What You Can Learn From Them. And Mike co-authored this with his partner, Douglas Shern, his business partner. And fascinating book, some really great, great stories in here. One of the key things you said, the most important part of success, Mike, you said, is the process of achievement itself. Tell us a little bit about that, and then I'd like to look at some stories before we end.
Well, the process of achievement is really taking the one class that they don't have at school, which is introspection. What are you good at? What satisfies you? And what do you find fulfilling? And put yourself in a position where you can take advantage of that.
So let's take a look at one of my favorites, I think was Mark Burnett, not just because he's English, but but he had such a fascinating background. Now, this is the guy who produced the executive produced the Survivor, and I believe The Apprentice. I believe there was some affiliation there with Donald Trump at one point.
Correct.
And he had such a fascinating background, and yet I heard time after time, oh, he's become an overnight success. But boy, that guy worked hard. Can we share some of his background?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what so many people have, overnight success, because he pops onto the scene. But he was in the a British air trooper. I mean, he was parachuting into places, always was into adventure and excitement, and was trying to find an outlet to bring that TV and pursued a show in France, I believe, before he actually put the script together for Survivor. So
right.
He was taking his passion for outdoor adventure and marrying it to TV.
Yeah.
And he had a real vision of how to get it done.
Yeah, he began with the Eco Challenge, which was a fantastic race, like a 7-10-day race or something like that, and then that led to Survivor. And he actually came to America. This is what a lot of people don't realize, I mean, how people have to get down and, roll their sleeves up. He came to America and was a nanny. That was his first job here.
Yeah.
Not a job you kind of associate with an ex-paratrooper.
But so many of those people, I mean, Bobby Flay, the restaurateur, worked on Wall Street. Mario Andretti washed dishes. Once you know sort of where you're going, there's many different ways to get there. And there's so many stories in the book of your first job isn't your only job. Know where you're going. Barry Sternlicht, the guy who really developed the whole idea of W Hotels, one of the most successful hotel chains, was flat out fired early in his career, and he realized that he was a visionary and that he wasn't a corporate guy, and he had the idea for W and he pursued it.
Mm.
And I think that's so true in many of the cases. People oftentimes say to me, in these economic times, there's just aren't that many opportunities. I'm like, no, it's just the opposite. And these economic times when everything is changing is when you can really pursue those things that you find fulfilling. Put yourself in a position, take advantage of the disruption, and set yourself on a course in 1 to 3 to 5 years where you'll be able to achieve your definition of success.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Mark Burnett was a visionary. He saw what other people didn't see. He brought reality TV to us, like good and bad there. But natural-born leaders, I wanted to talk about Brenda Barnes, who's the CEO of Sara Lee Corporation.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about her because she was highly successful with the Pepsi Cola company, and she took a break to be with her kids.
Right.
Which people say is suicide, but that wasn't the case, was it?
What a decision that was to understand, and many women face that challenge of, can you have a successful career? Can you be a mother? And can you have time for yourself? And Brenda Barnes had the confidence to say, look, I really want to spend time with my kids. I'm at the top of my game at Pepsi, yet I know that I can do this, and I will come back, and my career will still be there.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really an inspiration two successful women who show that you can make these choices and you can be and you can take time off to be with your children. And Sara Lee is a company that continues to be one of the most respected brands. Has faced adversity, and she's done a great job bringing them back. And she remains one of the top 50 most powerful women, and I believe she was number 9 in the top 10.
Yeah, yeah. And her definition of success was is being able to do what you hoped you could do. Just very simple. Very simple. Kathleen Black, another natural born leader, we talked about her a little while ago. She is president of Hearst Magazines. And her definition of success is relentless optimism, determination, and not taking things personally. She says, I've always taken things seriously. Insecure people take things personally.
And she's certainly leveraged that her whole career. I mean, Kathy Black goes back to the early days of growing up on the south side of Chicago, and she just had that fierce determination to succeed. She fought in an industry that was male-dominated, worked incredibly hard at USA Today, and was always knew where she wanted to get to and just sort of put herself on a course to get there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in the under the do-gooder archetype, I like this story particularly, Roger Barnett.
Yes.
Because he said that for most of his life, he had an interesting conversation with himself. His conversation went something like, do I dedicate myself to business and earn money, or do I devote myself to the public sector and try to and have an impact on the common good? Or can I do both at the same time?
And Roger, I've known Roger both as a client, as a friend for 20 years, and he had that struggle. I mean, when he was here in New York, he was on Wall Street, but he was always involved with a number of social causes. He would go to Davos during the winter. And finally, he decided that he wanted to help people, you know, be a force for good, be a sort of social entrepreneur. And he's done it with Shaklee and, you know, helping literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of people achieve their financial dreams while also creating a robust business.
Mm. Now, independent seekers, we touched on a little bit. Heidi Klum was one that I really liked. She defined success as being at peace with yourself, liking what you do, having a family. Having money and a successful career, she said, is no success if you don't have love around you. And she started out as a model, as we know. She kind of fell into that. But she said in her story that she was always too short, too fat. She had boobs, she had hips she shouldn't have had. They were always trying to get her to diet, but she refused. But she says, this was the key thing, I think, she says that she was more inventive than any of her competitors in the runway world.
Correct. I mean, Heidi Klum simply transformed herself into a lifestyle brand. And she's done, you know, lifestyle entertainment. She's done wonderfully with it and created a career that is much bigger than the one she started with, and yet done everything on her terms. And if Heidi Klum wasn't successful, she'd move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, she said she's not a big risk taker. She blames the German in her for that.
You know, I think sometimes there's some self-deprecating modesty there. She's not a big risk taker, but she certainly made all the right moves.
Yes, definitely.
You know, so we don't know the ones. You don't always know the ones that didn't work out.
Yeah. And this one, the independents who follow their dream, this is one of my favorites. Brian Williams, the anchor and managing editor of NBC Nightly News. And he said, quite simply, you just have to be willing to do anything to reach your goal.
Right. And my favorite quote from Brian Williams was, well, I was a volunteer fireman, and there's many similarities between that job
yes.
and being a network anchor. And I'm like, okay, Brian, what are they? He's like, well, you have to be ready 24/7. You have your boots next to your bed, and you never know how hot it's going to be when you get there.
Right.
I'm like, okay, fair enough.
And it boosts the endorphins.
He's a great guy. You know, you talk to him, and he's like a normal guy from Jersey, talking about his children and the great life and his wife and the great life they have. And yet, I mean, he's one of the most trusted, you know, people in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And he had that dream of being an anchorman since he was a little child, and there were only 3 anchor jobs in the world, and he had that dream since he was a little kid.
Yeah.
And got fired from places, couldn't get arrested, he said, in other places, sat in lobbies where everybody ignored him for days.
Right, and you know, even now there's a few more, at least there's some cable networks, but he still landed up on broadcast.
Yeah.
I mean, right, there's Fox and there's CNN, and he still ended up on NBC.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed reading this book, and I found it so inspirational myself. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Mike?
I think the one important thing is just find out, take 5 minutes out of your day and say, what am I good at, and what do I find fulfilling, and pursue that. I think too often in today's world, we just go from one thing to another without taking the time to reflect. And what we see from all these successful people that we interviewed is that there's many different ways to get there, but leverage your strengths. A lot of these success books say if you do this and if you do that, you'll be successful. And Doug and I would say, you know, maybe. but if you think about it for a minute and put yourself in situations, you've got much higher probability.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for being with us today. Do you have a website that you'd like to leave listeners with?
Absolutely. www.michaelberland.com. MichaelBerland.com. Or you can get the book, What Makes You Tick, on Amazon.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, thank you.
And my guest, Michael J. Berland, What Makes You Tick, How Successful People Do It, and What You Can Learn From Them is his book. And we're going to be right back with Barbara Winter. She is the founder of Winning Ways and the author of How to Make a Living Without a Job, or Making a Living Without a Job. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Need a lift into the shift? The One Gathering returns January 15th, 2012 at the Century Ballroom in Seattle. Make the quantum leap into our new love-based paradigm at this entertaining and healing multi-sensory program that expands heart consciousness. Join musicians Narian and Janet, author Dr. Joyce Hawks, energy intuitives Jennifer Yost and Samantha Parrott. $25 tickets on sale now at theonegathering.com. Be a part of the light wave. Visit theonegathering.com.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
More talk, less rock. Come on, that's a good thing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Some people know a good thing when they hear it. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. Welcome back. My next guest is Barbara Winter. She's the founder of Winning Ways, a training and publishing firm that creates resources for what she terms self-bosses. Her writing has appeared in dozens of magazines, and she travels nationally and internationally speaking to audiences about being joyfully jobless. Barbara Winter, welcome.
It's a delight to be here, Vicki.
Very pleased to have you. I maybe should have used this as your introduction. I'm going to read this that I saw on your website. This is the introduction to Barbara's Joyfully Jobless website. She says, it's different here. There's not a cubicle in sight. You won't find any one-size-fits-all business plans or formulas to follow here. We see self-employment as an opportunity to share our unique gifts, passions, and eccentricities with others. So every citizen proudly creates a one-of-a-kind enterprise that's a perfect fit for them. We're a peace-loving tribe. We spend no time trying to convince others to quit their jobs and join us. We're delighted to be ambassadors, but we're not missionaries. So tell us how you got into being joyfully jobless yourself.
Well, I think for me, it was like a lot of people. It was kind of an evolutionary process because I certainly didn't grow up with any encouragement to work for myself. It was, in fact, the assumption was that I would go to college and get a degree and it would suit me for a job working for somebody else. So that's how I started out as a high school English teacher and did that for 5 years and then left teaching, and it was an incredibly traumatic decision. I got no support from the people around me. People were like, you know, horrified. I now know, after talking to thousands of people who've made that same transition, that that's par for the course even now. But I did it long ago when self-employment was far less common than it is today.
Yeah. I like this in the beginning of your book, in the introduction to Making a Living Without a Job. You wrote that you became an entrepreneur because you were curious about what you could become. And this was the bit that made me pause. It was a curiosity never shared by any employer I ever had.
It's true. And really, I kind of came in through the back door to self-employment. What happened was I met someone who became my mentor, and he was very interested in personal growth and development, which I had never heard anything about. And I was probably in my late 20s at that time, and I just became a self-help junkie. And so I started going to seminars and reading books, and 30 years ago there were a lot fewer seminars and a lot fewer books to tap into. But one of the things I started to notice, especially when I would be around other people that were also exploring the same kinds of things I was exploring, is how often people would say, just kind of in passing, but what I'd really love to do is have my own business. And so I came to theorize that there was a big link between self-esteem and self-employment, that when we go on a personal quest or a spiritual quest, the time comes when we have to create a laboratory to test out these ideas. And to me, it just made so much sense. My own business was going to be the place where I learned more about myself than I could in any other possible environment. And so my motivation was a little unusual, perhaps, but or at least it's not something I hear a lot of other people talking about. But I still tell my students that today, that having your own business is the best personal growth seminar ever invented. So it's it's kind of the bonus, but it's the really important big bonus of what, it's so about so much more than simply making a living. It's really about finding yourself and then sharing what you have found with as many other people as are interested.
Yeah, interesting you say that, because my first guest, Michael Barland, in his book, What Makes You Tick, said that they interviewed 45 highly successful people, and every single one of them really, really had a very strong sense of self.
A strong sense of self, and I think that, we read a lot about purpose and callings and that sort of thing, but I think the successful self-bossers that I know really, whether they articulate it or not, really have a sense of mission about what they're doing. And more people are kind of stepping up and saying, well, I also want to use this business to make a difference in the world. So just in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years, we've been hearing more and more people talk about social entrepreneurism, which I find wildly exciting, where it's like a whole package. It's not just about the physical part of running a business, but there's a big emotional payoff and a spiritual payoff, too.
Yeah. Now, when you travel around the country, as I know you do, giving seminars, workshops, What did you see as the most common challenges, the most common obstacles that people put in their own way when they want to become self-employed? Because many people will toy with it for many, many years and never actually do it. What are the most common obstacles you see coming up?
Well, one of the things that I tell my seminar people is, first of all, keep in mind that if you're going to be self-employed, you're volunteering to be in a minority. And there is a parallel universe out there of people who are joyfully jobless, but if you haven't been one of them, you don't know it exists. You know, it's like if you suddenly, Vicki, decided you wanted to raise Arabian horses, you would discover there's a whole Arabian horse raising world out there. And so the willingness to start doing their homework and exploring, and that can be, you know, both exciting and a bit overwhelming at first, but that's a big one. The other thing, though, that is more subtle and insidious is that almost all of us who grew up after the Second World War have been really conditioned to think in terms of working for someone else, of being an employee. And that has been so, that has been so with us all along the way that it feels radical and scary. And, you know, and there are huge rumors about risk and, you know, horrible things that are going to happen if you step out on your own. And really, doing your homework can take away a lot of those. But the biggest fear remover, I think, is starting to connect with other people who are already doing it, who are farther along the path than you. And they don't have to be doing the same thing you are, but the fact that they are building something of their own and have insights about that and understanding when you hit a road bump along the way, all of that can make just an enormous difference. If you think that it's going to be about being very solitary and, you know, sitting in front of your computer and not interacting with other people, you probably won't succeed.
Yeah, and I think you made a point in the book about, you know, apprentice yourself. If you're not sure, you know, if you want to, say, open a bookstore or, you know, we'll use that as an example. Actually, I know somebody who wanted to open a travel company. He wanted to have a travel agency. He was an attorney, very highly qualified, sought-after attorney, hated it, had this dream of opening a travel agency, but didn't do a whole heck of a lot of research into, you know, what went into the daily grind of being a travel agent. And he's stuck with his agency, and he hated that probably even more than he hated law. So you made a really good point in the book about, you know, apprentice yourself, get out there and talk to people and ask them, you know, what's this like on a daily grind, and get in there and actually do it for a while.
I'm just working on an article right now about test driving your ideas and, you know, kind of roundup of different ways that you can go about this. And probably the company that's given the most visibility to this idea, and I don't even know the founder's name, but you may know about it, and some of your listeners undoubtedly have heard about it because it's gotten a lot of national publicity. But a fellow in Portland, Oregon, started a business called Vocation Vacations, where you know, if you wanted to run a bed and breakfast, he has bed and breakfast innkeepers that will let you come and apprentice with them for a week or 2 weeks. Brilliant idea, don't you think?
Brilliant, yeah.
And of course, there are also, you know, a lot of people whose ideas, it's harder to apprentice because they have kind of a vision of something that doesn't yet exist. But if you can even get yourself, you know, there's this wonderful quote from C.S. Lewis about if you want to get warm, you got to get near the fire. And it's, you know, if you want to get wet, you got to get near the water. And it's
right.
The same sort of thing. If you want to become entrepreneurial, you've got to start putting yourself in situations where you can see it in action. You can see how it works. You can see the, you know, the thing for me is that I see the joy of people who are truly making a living without a job, but doing the perfect thing for themselves. It's,
yeah.
You know, immeasurable.
It does not feel like work when you're doing what you love.
It isn't even close.
Yeah, and the commonality here in tying in these two segments that we're doing today, going back to my first guest again, who interviewed people like Heidi Klum and Mario Andretti and Mark Burnett and Brian Williams, they all were passionate about what they did, and none of them, not one of them, went after the money.
No. And, you know, Richard Branson says that, too. I've never started a business for the money. It's got to be fun, engaging, and creative. And when that is in the forefront, you just absolutely accelerate your chances of success. And there's a lot of cynicism about that. But I see it repeatedly over and over and over again. It's got to be bigger than the money. Money is like, you know, we have elevated it to the status in our country that makes it sound as if that's our only criteria for doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get that out of the way, and it's like, I am going to do this because, you know, and I hear people say, I could not not do this. When you get to that thing where you could not not do this, like I could not not talk about what I talk about. I couldn't.
Right,
I would have to be
right.
Duct tape.
Yeah, I know you're very, very passionate about what you do.
And not a missionary.
Right. Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to maybe look at some ideas and some multiple profit center ideas as well. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest this segment is Barbara Winter. Her book is called Making a Living Without a Job, Winning Ways for Creating Work That You Love.
Fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Do you have a writer in your life or someone who wants to write but needs help? Give the gift of creative coaching to encourage their passion this holiday season. Vicki St. Clair has been writing professionally for more than 15 years. She can help jumpstart new writers and unblock experienced writers. Each program is tailored to suit a writer's individual needs and can be a single, one-off consultation or multiple coaching sessions. Vicki can also help you navigate the publishing world and explore ways to make over six figures a year with your craft. See more about Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com. For creative coaching details, call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. Or email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Lose my senses and I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
Is that my new theme tune? Don't fence me in. Very good, Eric. Thank you. You're listening to Conversations Live. I'm Vicki St. Clair, and my guest is Barbara Winter. Her book is Making a Living Without a Job, and we're looking at different ways for creating work that you love. You had some fantastic ideas in your book that I just want to spend a few minutes sharing, Barbara. One of them, well, let's start with this one. You'd moved to Boulder, Colorado yourself. You were, in your own words, in the depths of despair around the holiday season. You hardly knew a soul. You were depressed because you thought, I'm never going to get invited to any parties. And then you had this brilliant idea about how to get to lots of parties, meet new people, and make money.
Yes. And that was so much fun. That was an incredibly fun thing. I just put a little ad in the paper offering to help at parties. And so you could, I think the tagline was like, be a guest at your own party. And so I got to go to all these Christmas parties and get paid to go there. And that's one of the things that I find really fascinating. I've had a couple of students along the way who've been incredibly good at finding ways to get paid to do what they want to do anyway. And I think that that's, you know, such a great exercise for becoming an entrepreneur, to start thinking about, okay, people pay to do such and such. How can I get paid to do it? And a big one is travel. And so I have a seminar I do called How to Support Your Wanderlust, which is about how to create portable businesses. And it's been an incredibly popular seminar. And the thing that's so interesting about all of this is that technology has made it possible for us to do things that even 15 years ago we couldn't have imagined.
Yeah,
and so we're becoming a lot more mobile, and the idea of having of being self-employed is changing every single day. I mean, it's so much easier to do it now than when I started, and tomorrow it will be even easier. And the sheer amount of information and resources that have come about just in the last decade or so are just mind-boggling.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely has opened things up. I mean, I give you an example. I was sitting on my mother's bed. I was actually lying on my mother's bed with her because she's housebound a lot. And she was watching Murder, She Wrote. I'm on a teleconference to Redmond. We're in England, but I'm on teleconference to Redmond and filing a report to my editor on my laptop. So it's really opened doors a lot.
It is. It still astonishes me, even as much as I take advantage of technology. And so when people are starting to think about having a business, it doesn't look like business used to look. We don't have to have a storefront. We don't have to be in the same place at the same time. The only thing that's about the same is that we still have to have a product or service to offer, and we have to have customers who want to buy it.
Yeah.
But that's it. And, you know, when I realized that I could teach, but I didn't have to do it in a conventional academic setting, that was wildly exciting to me. And so I always think of, you know, I think of my business as having a school with no walls.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Let's look at some ideas that you shared. Some of these I found on your website, some were in the book. Because, as you said, we're not looking at traditional businesses here. We don't have to look at traditional businesses here. Ways that people have started successful businesses, there were people who were turning blocks of ice into temporary works of art. You talked about somebody who rents out, this made me laugh, 150 mud turtles for the local turtle race in Minnesota.
That's one of my favorites.
And she took the business over from a local minister who sent his kids to college on the money he made renting out mud turtles.
I know. Don't you love it? I've been trying to get a mud turtle thing going in the country, but I have failed miserably.
Yeah.
But I love that idea. It's just hilarious.
There's a guy building tree houses. They've become very popular in Seattle. I was watching something on the TV last week about a hotel that has treehouse cabins. This one I like too. There was one fellow who liked swords. He began making swords when he was 9 years old. And today, he and his wife, I assume, own a company that makes historically accurate ancient armor and sell about 160 pieces every month to collectors around the world.
I know. You must have checked the article on my website called "You Could Never Make a Living Doing That." And that's one of my favorite things, is to kind of collect these really wacky, one-of-a-kind ideas that are succeeding. And I always try to imagine the kind of resistance they must have gotten from their family and friends when they said, you know, I think we're going to start making authentic replica swords. I think people really go for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There was also a former corporate HR manager, because, of course, many people are being laid off, losing their jobs. But a former corporate HR manager who didn't necessarily want to go back into working for a company. So he now consults one day a week with five different clients.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yeah. This one I loved. I mean, who... Who would have thought of this? Starting a cow sitting service. Tell us about that.
Well, I heard this young couple talking about this, and it was a young couple. They'd just been married a short time, both grew up on dairy farms in Minnesota, and that was their dream, was to own their own dairy farm. And they weren't at the point where they could afford to set themselves up in business, and they realized that dairy farmers never get to go on vacation. And so they started a cow-sitting service. And I believe that their first year in business, they had like 1 or 2 weeks that weren't booked. They were that bad. They were
amazing.
The ones who weren't getting a vacation.
Yeah,
because it was so successful. And I'm really a huge proponent for people who are just thinking about their first business to give serious thought to creating a service business, because the possibilities for that are just endless. They're fast to start. They're easy to start. I have a student in Denver who started, and it was almost a fluke the way it happened. She bought this old house she was renovating, and it had in a previous lifetime, it had been a wedding chapel. And people kept showing up while she was in the remodeling process who wanted to get married. And all of a sudden one day she went, oh, my goodness, there are lots of people that aren't affiliated with a church that need someone to conduct their wedding service. So she got herself certified as a wedding officiant, and now she has this whole pool of other officiants. She has like a temporary agency.
Wow.
And, you know, has just had this fabulous success. I just talked to her a month ago, and she said, I think April, they had the most bookings they ever had. And they're doing like hundreds of weddings a year now.
Mm. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left. I just wanted to talk very quickly about, you know, you say in the book, we don't have to have just one passion. Many of us have more than one passion.
Exactly.
You know, start multiple profit center.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people do have, you know, when they start asking the question about what do I really love, they create a business that is very, very focused. But then there are other people who have very diverse interests. And so I call them, you know, the Renaissance. I think we're all Renaissance souls, actually, but we just haven't been encouraged to develop multiple talents. But people who have very diverse interests also find that they can create different pockets of enterprise for themselves that allows them to do very diverse kinds of things. And it's really fun to watch how people put this together. No two people ever do it exactly the same way.
Mm.
And it's also so satisfying. You know, there are people like me who like to have, you know, kind of quiet creative time, but they also like to have a lot of interaction. And once you get past the notion that you can only have one or the other, get past that kind of either or thinking, all of a sudden this, you know, just vista of possibility opens up, and you realize I can figure out a way to include all these, all these things that feed my soul and get paid for it. It's a kind of a stunning moment when it hits us that we don't have to, you know, just slot ourselves into doing one thing and doing it over and over and over again.
Right, and that's what this book is all about. Joyfully Jobless is the website. Is it joyfullyjobless.com, Barbara?
It's joyfullyjobless.com, and if people want to, they can sign up on my website for my emailings, which go out at whim. I don't do them on a regular schedule. There'll probably be one out in the next day or so.
Okay.
And I also blog over at joyfullyjobless.com, and I update that a couple times a week. So,
yeah.
In fact, today there's an article on there that it's called Why Would Anyone Want to Be Joyfully Jobless?
Okay. Well, we got to run, and I really recommend listeners interested in this, check out Barbara's website, joyfullyjobless.com. There is a ton of information up there, some really great articles. And her book, this has been published, reprinted since 1993, Making a Living Without a Job, Winning Ways for Creating Work That You Love. Barbara, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And again, joyfullyjobless.com is the website. Barbara Winter, my guest. Thanks for spending this hour with us today. We appreciate you being with us. You can catch the podcast again at conversationslive.net. And if you have feedback on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617 or at info@conversationslive.net. I'll be back live in the studio next Monday, and we've got some great programs lined up for you to help you kick off 2012. Please join us. And if you enjoy our show, please tell a friend where they can find us too. I want to wish Eric Ryder a happy new year as
happy
we sign
new
off.
Happy new year to you, Vicky.
And thanks for everything you've done. Look forward to working with you again this year. And see you all next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Is it a coincidence that obesity and depression have doubled in the last decade? Not at all, say the authors of a breakthrough book that's the first to clearly explain the link between how we eat and how we feel. Tune in next week to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for The Happiness Diet with clinical psychiatrist Dr. Drew Ramsey. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific and catch updates on Twitter @Vicki St. Clair.